So we trust in a dim flashlight and always walk into available light. I'm not a woman inclined to bet, but it's never failed me yet. So today I'll drop stones into the river and the current takes them out into forever. And the truth is, most of us will never know where our best intentions go. Still, I'll drop another stone.
Our first reading from Luke comes from chapter 4, verses 16 through 20. When Jesus came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, he went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was given to him. He unrolled the scroll and found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because God has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. God has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of all in the synagogue were fixed upon him.
Oh, let all who thirst, let them come to the water, and let all who have nothing, let them come to the Lord, without money, without price. Or should you pay the price, except for the Lord?
I want to tell you about a desktop, a wooden desktop. There's a biblical, a Bible study scholar, I guess. It's not like a biblical scholar. It's a man who studies how to study the Bible for people like us. And I've appreciated his work over the years. And his name is Hans Rudi Weber. I've never actually met him, but... and he writes large Bible studies, like for the World Council of Churches, when they come together in huge meetings. And so over the years, I have appreciated some of his ways of explaining to us how to study the Bible. Well, on his desk, he has a sculpture, and he refers to this sculpture a lot. It's a sculpture, a wooden sculpture by an African artist, unnamed. He just picked it up somewhere. Hans did in a village. But the sculpture is of a woman on her knees and holding over her head a huge, not this size. I thought about doing it, and then we have one, but I couldn't do it. I'm not Matt. No CrossFit here. It's huge. She holds a Bible that's like 10 times this size. It dwarfs her, right? And that's what he has on his desk. That sculpture represents an African tale that he uses a lot, so I'm going to share it with you this morning. The story's told of a simple woman, and she always walked around her village with that huge Bible. No matter where she went, she always had her Bible with her. Never would she part from it, so the legend went. After a while, as you can imagine, the villagers started to tease her. They said, "Why always the Bible? There are so many other books you could carry around, so many other books you could read." She ignored them. The woman kept on living with this Bible. She was neither disturbed nor angered by all the teasing that happened to her all the time. Finally, one day, she knelt down in the midst of those who were laughing and teasing her. And holding the Bible high above her head, she said with a huge smile, "Yes, of course, there are many books I could read, but there is only one book that reads me." I love that kind of folk wisdom. I think that captures the reason why Matt and I hope to take a closer look at least once a year of a section of the gospel. Just once a year, you know, we want to hone in on the book that we read that also reads us. Now, we know that folks start out by listening to Bible messages a lot in the world. We can't control where that comes from. Some of us are raised in a church where we hear it. Sometimes we're out in the world where we hear it. Often, when you hear people read from the Bible, it's like totally excruciatingly dull, let's be honest. Or some of us find it's totally excruciatingly interesting, and we want to know more, and we have no idea how to get more because it's a hard book. And some of us are anywhere in that continuum, right? In there. What we want to learn and hope to learn here is that if you spend some time with the Bible, listening and praying and reading and analyzing, you might meet your reality in there. And if you do that, it might work on you a little bit. And when things work on us, we know that we are transformed. So that's how it is sometimes with the Bible. If you try to study it a bit and you read it in a group, there's a grace that happens little by little or sometimes in a huge flash. And the book that we read suddenly is reading us. So searching the scriptures, which is part of staying in love with God, can be, though, like any other experiment that you try. And Matt and I have said, on our deep commitment cards, people write this all the time. I want to read the whole Bible. And so we've come out and said, we don't really advise that. Start small. Because honestly, I have yet to meet anyone who's been successful doing that from start to finish all by yourself with the best of intentions. So right now, maybe you want to read the Gospel of Luke over these next 3 weeks. That's our invitation. And just go through it. It's 24 verses. That's fairly manageable. And if you don't have a Bible, see me. You can take one of the blue ones out of the pews. We do not mind. And we have extras. What I want to say about studying the Gospels is each is a little bit different. So we're going to hear about Luke, but let me just review that. Don't expect everything you've ever heard about Jesus to turn up. That's already a surprise to some people. Because if you've heard about the Jesus in the Gospel of Mark more, well, that Jesus in the Gospel of Mark is kind of tragic and enigmatic and misunderstood and left and abandoned. And when you read about the Jesus in the Gospel of Mark, you understand that being a disciple, a follower of that kind of Jesus means taking up your cross and following him. But then if you just read the Gospel of Matthew, which in that gospel we kind of see Jesus as the new Moses who fulfills scripture and establishes his own authority in this new day, when you read the Gospel of Matthew, you kind of then understand that being a disciple of Jesus means keeping all his teachings and following around like all the other disciples. Taking up your cross is not that big a deal in that gospel. Then if you go to John, which by my estimation is the hardest one to read, Jesus becomes the Word. And Jesus is an incarnate being. And Jesus reveals who is not of this world, but who is of God's world. And when we read the Gospel of John, we understand that being a disciple of Jesus there means responding to that word. And the way we are to respond is with belief and to work into fulfilling our own vocation in the community of the people of God. That's the Jesus of the Gospel of John. Well, for the next 3 weeks, we're going to examine the Gospel of Luke, and we haven't done that before. And I'm going to try and share a brief overview with you, very brief. And next week, then we're going to journey with Jesus into Jerusalem and do more about his life. And then finally, we're going to learn how the gospel writer presents the death and resurrection uniquely of Jesus in week 3. So I want to begin by looking at who wrote Luke and learn a little bit about the structure. And let's see what happens. So the gospel of Luke is compassionate. That's an overriding theme in there. And the gospel of Luke, that Jesus is a friend to the outcast. Jesus is related to the whole history of Israel through the scriptures and world history and the unfolding of God's redeeming acts in our human history. I probably just lost a lot of you. So what I mean by that is, when Sarah gets up to read that scripture passage that she read, that's Jesus reading the words out of the Old Testament. That's what I mean when I say Jesus is related to the history of Israel. He gets up and ties himself to that by reading that out loud. The religious leaders reject Jesus. And like those who killed God's prophets in the past, they also hand Jesus over to be crucified. Those are the leaders for the Gospel of Luke. The people, however, in the Gospel of Luke are totally receptive to Jesus for the most part, completely different than their leaders. And though the people figure briefly in Jesus' death, it's really only briefly, because the Gospel of Luke really points to the people of God as moving quickly on from that and establishing the ministry of the church and becoming witnesses for the mission that Jesus had inaugurated with them. And we know that goes on in the book of Acts, but we're not going to talk about Acts, but that's where all that plays out. So who wrote the book of Luke? In this case, it's fairly agreed upon that a man named Luke wrote it. Phew. I love it when that happens. Both volumes, Luke and Acts. It's not totally agreed upon. So let's just be clear. We have evidence that points to a man named Luke being a companion of the Apostle Paul. And that's a sculpture of Paul, right, up there being converted to Christianity. So there's a verse in the Bible in Colossians that says that Luke was a companion of Paul. And so that's who we think wrote it. There's also another historic volume. It's called The Oldest Gospel Prologues. And here's how it reads. Luke is a Syrian of Antioch, a doctor by profession, who was a disciple of apostles. That means he came after Jesus and followed those who followed Jesus. And then followed them until Paul died. He served the Lord without distractions. Unmarried, childless, and he fell asleep at the age of 84. That's how they wrote about him in ancient texts. I like that. Without distractions, unmarried and childless. That's actually, yeah, dying compared to that is, yeah. So, the time that this was written and completed was probably a decade after the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple, and they're dating it around 175 to 200 Christian era. So who was it written for, besides us, right? The Gospel of Luke is commonly regarded as a document for non-Jewish people, so people who came after Jesus. The knowledge that Luke presupposes in its audience lets us know that he expects those who read it and hear it to know about the Jewish faith, but also he expects that they're learning how to follow Jesus. So that's why there's lots and lots of stories. And the writer of Luke, uses Mark as his source, and another source we call Q. Q stands for the German word Quell, or Quell, I don't know how to say German, and all it means is source. So, and that's how biblical scholars know that things show up in the different gospels in differing ways, and who sources who. And so Luke has the Gospel of Mark and another source, and then his own interpretation. finally, I want to talk about, or not really finally, but I'm going to go into the structure, how it is, because that really helps some people when you can really see discernible parts of it. So would you put that up there? Yeah. So that's how biblical scholars divide up the Gospel of Luke. It's in sections. The source I'm using is called the New Interpreter's Bible, and that's what has helped me follow this. So I just want to say just a few brief words about each of those sections. Maybe it will be interesting. I hope it will be informative. Why would a prologue be important to us? In many ways, the prologue is really important in the Gospel of Luke because it tells us that the person who wrote it was very interested in presenting a biography of Jesus to us. And it tells us a lot about his intent. So I'm just going to read those first four verses for us. It goes like this. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled or surely believed among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who were from the first eyewitnesses and servants of the word. Therefore, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, it seemed good also to me to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, that's who's receiving this, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. So we do not think that Theophilus is Jewish. So Luke is confirming right from the beginning, I'm setting this out so you can know better, okay? And these four verses follow a pattern of all the ways things were written by literature back then. So we think that the writer was highly educated. And the words that are in Greek, one person said who took Greek, I did not take Greek in seminary. Do you take Greek? Yeah. Of course, Matt took Greek. We know this. I did not. Even the best Greek-speaking scholars that went to seminary, I read all these forms that said even they have to have their dictionary for the book of Luke because his vocabulary is stupendous. And he uses very educated words. So that's kind of what's important for us to know is he's setting out to do a biography. And then he goes right into talking about Jesus as a baby. And the infancy narrative, the story of Jesus as a baby, is distinctive in Luke in that it gives us parallels to John the Baptist. Remember how I said he parallels everything. He wants Jesus' life to come at the end of a line. And he wants us to know he didn't just appear. He's here after John the Baptist here. And Luke is the only gospel really to report any event from Jesus' boyhood. He wants us to know who this person is. Then he moves into the time where Jesus is preparing for his ministry. There's a lapse of years, and we get introduced to the context to let us know we're going into that section. And Luke starts with all these stories of John the Baptist coming and teaching and baptizing people. And we close this section with Luke reading or writing all of the genealogy of Jesus. And he starts with Jesus and goes to his father Joseph and traces it all the way back. And the last two are Adam and God. So he wants us to see that line of Jesus coming to us. And following this setup, then Luke takes us into the next three sections, which really is the heart in a lot of ways of the ministry of the Jesus in Galilee. And it's fairly straightforward. And scholars are debating a little bit about it. But once Jesus enters Jerusalem, this is recorded, and he does all of his teaching then. He teaches in the temple, as recorded in Luke, every day. That's why the leaders get so upset with him. Because he's saying, well, you say this, but I say this. And he is supported, though, as he's doing this, by all the people who come to the temple to be taught. You might say he's a bit of an upstart in that, because what happens really clearly is that passage that Sarah read for us, is that Jesus says, you're teaching these things, but these are the poor people. And God came for them. I'll go back to that. We then go into the passion and resurrection narratives and the final section, which Luke is the only gospel which reports a speech after Jesus sits with his disciples and has the Last Supper. He goes into a big discourse. And that's a little bit different. So that's the structure of it. And now I just want to say a little more specifically about the kind of man they point to for Jesus. I said earlier that the Gospel of Luke is centered on the person and stories about him. The scribes and the Pharisees are those leaders that are sitting there in the temple, and they ask like this, who is this? Speaking blasphemy. So they want to know who he is. John the Baptist asks, are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another? And soon after that, Jesus' own followers who have been following him, they say, well, who is this? So Luke is trying to tell us, we need to know who this person is. After that, Herod, who was the ruler of the land, says, John I beheaded, but who is this about whom I'm hearing? He's concerned for his own power. And after these wonderings about his identity, it's Jesus' turn next, right, in this whole line, to question. And so he asks, gets his disciples and says, who are those people out there saying I am? What are you hearing? Who do they say I am? So that repeated question by everyone over and over and over sustains the issue that Luke cares for us to figure out for ourselves. Who do we say Jesus is? Who do we say Jesus is? So once you kind of ask that question then, I guess the next step for folks is to figure out the name you want to use for Jesus. The thing that is interesting to me is that there's no right or wrong way to do this. What there is time. Time and space for us to wonder together about whether Jesus is a Messiah, or Jesus is a Savior, or Jesus is a Lord, or Jesus is the Son of God, or the Son of Man. These are all questions we need to ask each other in groups as we go into these next 3 weeks. And to delve into wondering what difference does that any of that make? Because once you have these sorts of details, it just takes time. So you've got a structure, and you've got titles. And then I'm going to finish with just telling you a few of the themes. Because there's also this huge overriding understanding in the book of Luke that God's purpose is to come for the poor. God's redemptive purpose is to set the life of Jesus among us so that all we do helps our neighbor in some fashion. So some people believe that Luke's most dramatic insight into how we help our neighbor is his perception that Jesus said, in our language, all means all. Jesus initiates activity, words, compassion, everything towards persons, regardless of their social standing, which broke all the norms, all of them. No other gospel is so clear and emphatic on this. None. And what happens when he does this most is he sits at table with people. That's how he does it. Samaritans, sinners, tax collectors, women, and outcasts. They feature hugely. And the fact that he sits at table with them and that Luke refers to this over and over again tells us that God's main purpose of this Jesus in the Gospel of Luke is to break those norms and to have table fellowship with anyone and everyone that he would sit with. Following that, I talked about the poor, and I just said, the poor are prominent in Luke in this way. We've heard maybe of the Beatitudes, and different Gospels have different versions. So the Gospel of Matthew says, blessed are the poor in spirit. And when we say blessed are the poor in spirit, that kind of, we get to take a step back. But you won't be surprised that in Luke, it says, blessed are you who are poor. So guess who has to step back? Which is why the leaders were upset. Because they would spiritualize those teachings so that they themselves wouldn't have to deal with what was being demanded of them. Finally, I want to say about the role of the disciple in Luke. It's fairly simple. To be a disciple and follow the Jesus that's in the Gospel of Luke, you need to imitate him. Do what I do, he says. He's empowered by the Spirit. He's compassionate towards the poor and the oppressed. He heals people. He forgives people. He prays. And he does die a martyr's death. That's what he calls us to do. And the way he does it is to say, follow me. Luke's gospel is where we get the great stories of Jesus going to the water, to the fishermen, and saying, follow me. So Jesus is a model to be imitated. So what does that mean for us? Since we know that the table fellowship was the main place where Jesus did what is the heart of his understanding of God's call to him, the Gospel of Luke says that the truth concerning the things about which you are instructed all happen around the table. That's where they play out. That's where they play out. It's who's welcome at the table. It's who has enough to eat at the table. It's who has a table. Whose house is the table in? How do you get there? When do you come back? How do you prepare your food to be there? Who do you invite to come alongside? Luke makes sure that nobody misses the point that Jesus was always stewing about the terrible needs of poor people. If you take nothing else away from that gospel, that's what we want you to take away. And I want to close with Frederick Buechner's words about Luke, which are much more poetic than my own. He says it like this. To put it in a nutshell, by playing all these things up about the poor people, Luke shows that he was a man who believed that you shouldn't let the fact that a person is jailbait keep you from treating them like a human being. And that if you pray hard enough, there's no telling what actually may happen. And that if you think you've got heaven made, well, don't let it worry you that there are children across, while you don't let it worry you, that there are children across the tracks who are half starving to death, then you're kidding yourself. Because these characteristics may not prove that Luke was a doctor like the Luke that we think. But if Luke wasn't a doctor, it was a serious loss to the medical profession. If the Spirit empowered the witness of the Gospel of Luke to help poor people, then by opening ourselves up and trying to read it for 3 weeks, by searching those stories and scriptures, we maybe will be guided by God's Spirit today to be part of that ongoing work. And I just remind you of that tale. And the reason we might be reminded is because there are many books that we can read, right? But there's only one book that reads us. So, try and read a little bit this week. And I really mean it. If you do not have a Bible at home, those blue Bibles are for you. Just take one. Just take one. And open, there's a table of contents in the front, and find the book of Luke. And read a little bit, and see if you yourself might not see God's love and care for the poor there. Amen.
I could just sit and wait for all your goodness, hope to feel your presence. And I could just stay, oh, I could just stay right where I am and hope to feel you, hope to feel something again. Oh. I could hold on. I could hold on to who I am and never let you change me from the inside. And I could be safe. Oh, I could be safe here in your arms and never leave home. Never let these walls down. But you have called me deeper. You have called me deeper, and I'll go where you. You have called me deeper. You have called me deeper.